Hello everyone, Rich here, back again with another edition of Rich Pickings. This time I'm going to be looking at Clint Eastwood on the Film and Podcast. So I thought what I'd do was, again, grab another pile. You'll probably notice through the top 10, there's easily over half of the amount here that are obviously directed by him as well. He's easily one of my favourite movie stars and filmmakers of all time. I think as a filmmaker, he is parallel with the likes of Kurosawa, and obviously there are those links via Leone. I think there are certain elements in there he's obviously riffed off in basing The Man with No Name, and I also think you can see certain flourishes in his work still today. Not all of his films are perfect pieces of cinema. Some of them are very questionable. But to be honest, there's not a lot of his back catalogue that I dislike. There are some that I have issues with. I will probably share that if people want to interact more via the Facebook group. But today, I just want to concentrate on what are my favourite films and why they're my favourites. Is there some kind of affinity I have with them? At what point or entry point was it in my introduction to his career? So I'm going to start off with number 10. And it's A Perfect World. This just nudged out for me In the Line of Fire from Wolfgang Petersen. Both films are from 1993. A Perfect World is the first one I'm going to introduce that is directed by Clint Eastwood. I think this is an interesting film to watch from the point of view of watching Eastwood the movie star. He is very much a supporting character in this film, and I think some of that is probably to do with his directorial duties, but I also think that it is obviously more of a Kevin Costner vehicle. I think personally it's Kevin Costner's best film. It's a heartwarming film despite the subject matter. I think it's quite a touching story, and of course the characters are, you know, a little questionable, but I like the arc. I like the relationship between the young boy and Kevin Costner's convict. And if those of you are unfamiliar with it, it essentially tells the story, a very simple story of two convicts on the run who happen to accost a young child and hold him hostage. And they basically go on a road trip across America with Clint Eastwood, who is the sheriff, and Laura Dern, his partner, who are basically going to bring these convicts down no matter what. And there is just, it's the relationships, it's the play of the characters. It's one of the easiest films to watch, I would say. It's a very 90s film, but I think in terms of accessing Clint Eastwood's work, I think this is a brilliant one to introduce people to. And, you know, it's not too challenging. It's got a really poignant little ending. It's heartfelt. I think this is, yeah, Clint Eastwood at his best, really, during the 90s. And, you know, if you want to kind of put that in perspective, this is a year after Unforgiven. It's more than likely another reason he kind of takes a little bit more of a back foot as well from, you know, the Oscar-winning film that is. But more on that film later. Second, number 9. Is Gran Torino from 2008. This is another one directed by Clint Eastwood. And he is very much the lead in this role. And what I like about this film, and I'm hoping to discuss Gran Torino in far more detail, because I'm hoping to do a companion pieces episode with along with Harry Brown. And I think it comes in a line of films and a direction of film making where we are very much championing the elder generation. And I think Gran Torino really, really captures this extremely well. And I also think what is the genius of Gran Torino is it plays against convention. It sets up Clint Eastwood's crotchety old character, you know, as this sort of ex-veteran who, you know, I quote, I've piled gooks 17 people high, and you know, he comes out with some of the most racist, you know, inflammatory terms you come across. And he is a character who you can't help but feel slightly opposed to, but there's something about him because he brings the history and the gravitas of what a lot of Eastwood characters have represented. And you see a really interesting character arc of where he is obviously the one remaining, the last white man standing in a neighborhood which has been taken over by foreigners in his eyes. And it's the how he deals with that, and in typical Clint Eastwood fashion, you know, it's the glare, it's the growls, it's the get off my lawn, you know, it's the famous quotes that we hear of and what we expect from him. But what we don't expect in this film is how his character really does turn, and like I say, plays against convention. It sets up that he's this racist character, which he clearly is. Yet by the end of it, he feels that he needs to help and he needs to do something about it. And what I love, spoiler alert, if you've not seen the film, switch off now, is that it leads up to an end sequence that very much is a swan song to the characters he's played. And we are expecting him to do the inevitable. We're expecting him to take out the bad guys, you know, clean up the streets, clean up the neighborhood. And in a really, really poignant moment by the end, where he confronts the drug dealers, if you like, he simply, you know, pulls out a lighter, lights a cigarette. They obviously think he's going to reach for his gun. And he kind of taunts them and just points his finger. But in our own heads, I think as fans of Eastwood, we see him take out those bad guys no matter what. And that, to me, is what stays with me with Gran Torino. I think it appeases the fans, but I also think from a sort of more liberal stance, it kind of appeases the masses as well. And for that, I think it's a film that really should be held up very highly in his career. Brilliant. And I also think it's well worth watching The Mule as a double feature with this, which again is I said swan song earlier. The Mule ironically kind of follows on from that and once again becomes something which feels like it could be the last film we see him act in. So at number 8 we have Where Eagles Dare. This is a particularly special film to me. I used to watch a lot of war films with my dad growing up, with my granddad. I kind of come from a family of people who have served and have become aircraft engineers, and it's kind of always been there. And something like Where Eagles Dare is a very, not just an early entry in watching Clint Eastwood, this is quite possibly the first Clint Eastwood film I would have watched, because I watched it very, very young. And although I was aware of him, it was an easy way in for me in watching a war film, which is essentially an adventure film as well, really. It's a very easy watch. And it's Richard Burton, it's Clint Eastwood. What more do you want? And what I love about this is Clint Eastwood is in typical Clint Eastwood fashion. He is a machine in this film. He's like the Terminator. He literally just walks through the film saying very little, shooting Nazis, while we listen to Richard Burton, the spiel he has throughout it. And, you know, again, there's the iconic lines that we have from Burton. And we have the iconic moments. And for me, absolutely, the moment on top of the cable cars is something that stands out to most people, which is a great adventure sequence in its own right, a great action piece. And I just think that, again, I know it's kind of early on in his movie career, really, but I think he serves a function in Where Eagles Dare. And it's quite an unforgettable role, despite him not doing a great deal. He is literally like the firearm for Richard Burton's character. So that's Where Eagles Dare at number 8. And that's directed by Brian G. Hutton. 1968 that was. So like I said, quite early on. Around the same time he kind of did Paint Your Wagon and ridiculous films like that. So number 7. This is another one again from my childhood that really does stand out to me. I was probably way too young to watch it, but it's a typical example of a film I probably stayed up very late to watch with my parents. And it's Escape from Alcatraz, and this is one of the many films that Clint Eastwood made with Don Siegel, and it was made in 1979, ushering in the end of his 70s career. And, you know, really good film this is. Again, it would make a brilliant companion piece and double feature with the likes of The Shawshank Redemption. And it tells the true story of a trio of men who managed to escape Alcatraz. Did they survive or not? That's questionable. Nobody really knows. But we do know they escaped. And this film is a really good sort of cinematic piece that shows how they escaped. And what I really like is the characters as well. Fred Ward's in this as well, if you remember from the likes of Remo, Armed and Dangerous, and Tremors. And you know, it's got a good cast of supporting characters. There are a number of scenes in it that stand out to me. One of the most obvious scenes, especially seeing it as a kid, which, you know, really stuck with me, is the workshop scene. I'm not going to say much about that. If you've not seen Escape from Alcatraz, I highly recommend it anyway, just as a piece of cinema. It's a great little film. I think it's one of the best prison dramas. And what I also like about it is the pace of it, really. It's like a lot of prison dramas. It's, you know, they're quite pedestrian and take their time with sort of building the characters and how they're going to escape, and gets a little inside people's heads as well, and their thought processes and how they're figuring things out. And that's what I like about a good prison drama. Is how are they going to get out of this space, and what is going to happen to them? Are they going to make it? But the fact that this is obviously based on a true story really adds to it. So that's number 7, Escape from Alcatraz, Don Siegel, one of his many collaborations. Number 6, which I think would probably be a lot higher up on most people's lists, is the Oscar-winning film Unforgiven from 1992. This is yet another one that Clint Eastwood directed, won an Oscar for. And wow, what a brilliant, brilliant Western. It is more than likely his final Western. Oh, I would hate to say that, but it more than likely will be his final Western. And it really does, in a similar fashion to Gran Torino, bookend a portion of his career. This does obviously bookend his Westerns. Now, I've not got to any of his Westerns yet, and obviously this is a big part of what Clint Eastwood is known for. It's a huge part of his career. But Unforgiven is, in my eyes, you can watch his character for who he is and who he's named. And what pans out in that film is a story in its own right. But what I also like about it, and what I think most people will bring to this film, is that his character in Unforgiven, I think it's Bill Money, I might be wrong about that, he could be anybody. He could be any of those characters he's played in any of his Westerns who happens to have grown old and retired and have this past that comes back to him, and that he embraces. And it's going to take one little thing to tip him over the edge and turn him into the man he is when he has liquor inside him. And my word, are there some amazing sequences, especially the final confrontation between Eastwood and Gene Hackman as well, who, you know, he's collaborated with quite a lot. This is the thing with Clint Eastwood, is that it's the roster of actors that he works with. And I think that he is an individual who likes to create relationships and build on a catalogue of people that he wants to work with, that he enjoys working with. And I think a lot of the credit is to of course, to his casting and supporting actors, but I also think with his direction and the caliber of filmmakers, the legacy that has kind of that he's held on to, learning through the likes of Leone and Don Siegel, is he's observed and he understands how to make a film. This isn't a movie star who would have, you know, just gone back to his trailer when a scene was cut, quite happy to sit there and just study and learn the ropes of filmmaking. And I think that's like with any truly great filmmaker, you know, to learn how it's done from some of the best people out there by watching and soaking it in is testament to somebody's determination and attitude to learn the ropes, really. You know, this isn't a man who has gone to film school. This is a man who's grown through becoming a B-movie actor, gravitating to becoming a TV actor, becoming a household name, and then becoming a movie star. He's had an interesting trajectory, I think, through film. Number five. I have chosen, my number five is what I think is personally the best of the Spaghetti Western trilogy, where he plays The Man With No Name. And that's For a Few Dollars More by Sergio Leone. And this was made in 1965. Why do I like this one over The Good, The Bad and The Ugly and Fistful of Dollars? I think it's really the relationship between Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef's character. I like the structure of two bounty hunters. It's a simple story. Don't get me wrong, I think all three films are flawless, and you know, it's chalk and cheese. It's very, very difficult to choose between each one of them, I would say, but this one I tend to always gravitate to wanting to put that one on first. Or if I was to choose any of them, I would watch that one over any of the others. I love The Good, The Bad and The Ugly. If I'm going to be pedantic about it, it's, have you got 3 hours spare? It's a long, sprawling epic. It's, you know, there's nothing wasted on it. But I just like how tight, you know, For a Few Dollars More is. It's, you know, such a good Western. One of the best out there. Looks beautiful. It has the iconic imagery. It has the Morricone soundtrack. You know, what more could you ask for in a Clint Eastwood Western? And, you know, coming out of, you know, the revisionist period as well, and it being, you know, an Italian background, there's exploitative elements of it. There's just a certain charm about it, I think. And it's interesting to watch films like that early on in Eastwood's career, as he gravitated from, you know, Rawhide into or essentially foreign films that had this kind of outside outlaw outlook on the Western, and helped to really reinvent it and you know, help us see it through different eyes, I think, and give a much fresher approach to the genre. Number four, I absolutely love this film, and I think the reason I gravitate towards this within the sort of, you know, final rundown is I love the weird, and I love Westerns that are hybrids and absorb other influences. And I think High Plains Drifter from 1973 is one of the best examples of this. It's easily one of Clint Eastwood's greatest directorial pieces. It's his Western debut. It's not as a director, it's not his debut as a director, but it's his first go at doing a Western. And what I think is really interesting is the subject matter he's chosen for it, because it's not very often that Clint Eastwood tackles anything fantastical or the supernatural. I think there was obviously Hereafter, which I don't think was particularly well received, but High Plains Drifter really does work. It works on so many levels. I think you can still watch it pretty much as, and there'll be spoilers on this one because I think it's integral to be able to explain what this film is about. But if you watch it on a level of one man, an outlaw in the traditional sense, riding into town and then riding back out again once he's cleaned the place up, it works like that. But at a supernatural level, it's all there. And I think this idea of someone coming back to a town who is essentially trying to solve his own death and, you know, sort of open up the weaknesses within this kind of microcosm of society and then literally painting the town red is such an iconic image from cinema and such an original take on the genre for that time period as well. And it's interesting to see it come around the time of things like, you know, DC Comics, weird Western tales. You know, you think of characters like Jonah Hex were sort of created around this time as well. So it was kind of really primed, I think, with a lot of the sort of pulpy comic book material that's coming around and also based on sort of real incidences that were happening in the 1960s as well. I'm pretty sure it's linked to an infamous serial killer, if I recall. I'm pretty sure the screenwriter was reading into the way a certain homicide happened, which then sparked the idea for this story. But as I say, very interesting subject matter, very interesting film for Clint Eastwood to tackle, especially for the first ever Western that he directed. So that was 1973, which takes us to another film with Don Siegel, probably easily one of his most famous roles, that of Dirty Harry. And Dirty Harry is, although one of his first urban characters, is still very much an outlaw, a man who works on outside of the system, and he has his own rules, safe to say, and certain ways of bringing people in. And I also think that Dirty Harry, again, I mean, it's quoted so much, and you know, it's one of those films that is very of its time. It places Clint Eastwood very much at the center of crime and solving the crime and bringing in somebody who is far worse than he is. Now, you know, some people, most people, including myself, will watch Dirty Harry, and you will root for Dirty Harry, whether you question the way he does things or not. You know, he is the archetypal anti-hero. And I think that, you know, easily one of the most iconic characters of the 1970s and easily one of the best anti-heroes put to screen. And it's interesting that, you know, Frank Sinatra was originally pitched to play this role, and I'm pretty damn sure it would have been a completely different type of film. I think Eastwood was born for this role. And I think if you look at the works of Eastwood and around that time period, especially during the late 60s and early 70s, there's this wonderful transition of the Western character through films such as Coogan's Bluff, stepping out of the West, stepping out of the frontier into the city. And I think Don Siegel and Clint Eastwood were very conscious of that. It's very clear that you can see this transition of the way that they take that archetypal character and start to move him more towards modern storytelling. And I think that's then kind of what gives birth to characters such as Dirty Harry. I think Coogan, you know, he shares the same DNA in a lot of respects. And, you know, again, if you watch that film and then you watch something like Dirty Harry, that you can certainly see the connections to that as much as you can his Westerns. So that's number three, Dirty Harry. So on to number two, we have Outlaw Josie Wales. So this would be, in nature of the way this is ordered, my favourite Western of Clint Eastwood's. It's, again, I would have watched this possibly in my teens, and it's really stuck with me. I think with Outlaw Josie Wales, it has everything in there of what you want from his westerns. This to me, I think, probably along with something like Unforgiven, is a definitive Clint Eastwood western. And I think it's one of the first that people would watch to understand what he's about as a movie star, what he's about as a director. I think by this point, he's really hitting his stride. He's extremely confident in what he's producing. And the character as well, and the way he portrays that character, is in typical, you know, ruthless Clint Eastwood fashion, especially during the 1970s. And a real good look at the frontier and the West, and not using cliche characters. I do like how in the 70s, through the likes of things like Little Big Man, you know, a number of films you could have watched around that period where they were very conscious of portraying Native Americans as people, as characters that aren't really that different to the white man in some ways. They don't sort of paint them necessarily as, you know, cliche characters who with broken English and, you know, carrying smoke pipes and chanting and jumping around a fire. But in this instance, they, you know, that they are kind of a sidekick in some ways, but they also very much hold the screen as much as Clint Eastwood does. And I think Outlaw Josie Wales is absolutely one of the best examples of this. It's such a brilliant, brilliant revenge western, if not, you know, the best in my opinion. And I think Outlaw Josie Wales, you know, it's loved by many, whether it's people's favourite of Clint Eastwood westerns. I just think it would be interesting to see, you know, how this character continues to influence a lot of sort of revenge style westerns, because you do still, I think, see echoes of that in those types of stories. I think westerns, you know, they do tend to have a clear blueprint a lot of the time, but there's definitely, if you watch a revenge western, then Josie Wales, his DNA is right there. The other reason I love Josie Wales is it was made the year I was born as well. So there's a kind of that affinity. That's five films so far out of this top 10 that have been directed by Clint Eastwood as well. And it's moving on to the sixth that is directed by Clint Eastwood, which is my number one. And this is actually his directorial debut. He directed it for free. He, by that point, had you know, had the confidence to think, well, I'm going to give this a shot, as I mentioned earlier, by observing the likes of Siegel and Leone and learning the ropes. He was willing to tell the studios, there is no need to pay me anything. You know, therefore, the responsibility is taken away from them there. There is nothing to lose. If I do this for nothing and you like it, then it's win-win. And that's Play Misty for me. Now, the reason I love this film so much is because it's often the first film I will recommend the majority of people who turn around to me and say, oh, I can't stand Clint Eastwood. It's just all cowboys. It's just all guns. It just goes around shooting people. Play Misty for me, I think, is the best example of a Clint Eastwood film which isn't a typical Clint Eastwood film. Yes, he plays a bit of a douche in it. Yes, he commits acts in this film again, which you would absolutely question. And some would say he's still very much a Clint Eastwood character. But to see Clint Eastwood play a radio DJ that is stalked by a female, and, you know, again, it's of its time, but it's extremely entertaining. It's a brilliant thriller, and I think for a directorial debut is a really tight, well-paced first effort. It's a great film. I love the little nods as well. I love the fact he goes into a bar and the person he consoles in and chats to is Don Siegel. There's that kind of rapport there. I love the cinematography, the lighting. I love the settings, as we're familiar with most Clint Eastwood films. they're set in San Francisco. There's imagery there. And I think, I'm not quite sure if it started with this film, but if you notice with Clint Eastwood films, one of his kind of little Easter eggs it will always have, or his little nods or signatures, in it, if you want to put it a better way, is his films will always end with the camera raising up and panning over the final scene. You'll notice that in the majority of his films, right up to present day. Play Misty for Me, there's other sort of little pointers and signatures in there, I think you can kind of see, and you can probably still detect nowadays from some of his latest films. But I love this film. I love it. It's one I watched again, probably watched it when I was way too young. But for saying this is, you know, 1971, really ushers in his 70s career, which, you know, he was pretty much at the top of. This is, you know, before the action heroes of the 80s, Clint Eastwood was the man. He was, you know, he was the star. And I think it's an amazing thing to watch his career. We kind of forget that, you know, you watch his films and he does a lot of his soundtracks as well. People will often dismiss Eastwood as being, you know, very sort of one-dimensional and, you know, not have a great deal of range. Well, you know, he's not Laurence Olivier. He is a movie star, and it's about the charisma. It's about how he holds the screen. It's about as little as he says rather than as much as he says. And when he says something, it counts. It hits home. So that's my top 10 of Clint Eastwood. I'm hoping there'll be other opportunities to discuss his work, but I thought it'd be a good one to share with you today. What I'd love for you to do, if you like this episode, please rate and maybe drop a review on iTunes, which really, really helps. You can follow me over at Film and Podcast, and you can also follow me at Rich Pieces as well, both on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to just follow all the tat that I end up buying each week, such as Blu-rays and things, then you're probably best following the Film and Podcast Instagram page. Equally, you can search for the Film and Facebook group, and if you're lucky enough to know some people, try and get an invite from them. That's it for now, and I'll be back next time with another Rich Pickings. Cheerio.
That's just a sample of the films to come. You can't please all the people all the time, but we hope we'll please most of you most of the time. Anyway, see you soon.